You are listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornBySports.com. I am John English, the Germs guy, and joined as always by our intrepid producer, Devin. Hello, Devin.
Hey, John. Welcome to the NBA season.
No kidding. Alan's off again this week, but we will go over what are some actual regular season games. We have real stats and real results to go over. It's very nice.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know about you, but I have absolutely loved having Jazz basketball back. Something to look forward to throughout the week. And when it actually matters, you start seeing the players that actually are going to play. So this should be good.
Yep. So far, the Jazz are 2-1. They beat the Sacramento Kings last night. They lost to the Lakers, and then they also won their home opener against the Thunder. I think we all would have guessed a 2-1 start. Maybe some 3-0 with some hopefulness with the Lakers, but 2-1 feels right.
Yeah, yeah. I think 2-1 is reasonable. You know, you're going to go on the road. You're going to play at least one back to back. You know, but 2-1 is fine, especially when you've got new guys trying to put it all together and where we did have those preseason struggles. You can't get too optimistic to kick it off, right?
Yeah, and the funny thing about preseason is the Jazz's defense looked really bad. Now that we've started the season, it was their offense that looks more concerning. Small sample size, the Jazz have the number one defense in the NBA right now. They've held their opponents to 95, 95, and 81. So we'll see how long that streak continues. Offense, you know, hopefully catches up. But I think those numbers will come around. Conley had a decent shooting night last night after his first two horrendous starts. Boyan missed the game, but Jazz are undefeated when he plays. And he looked incredible against the Kings. Maybe it's not hard to look good against the Kings right now. Luke Walton looks like he's having some early struggles with that team. But
yeah, I mean... The way the Jazz just manhandled them, you know, that was a game I was actually concerned about when I looked at the schedule for the week. Is it was like, oh, you're going to get the Kings on a back-to-back following the Lakers. You know, it's not a home and home back-to-back. And then the Jazz came out, and I don't know if it was Bogdanovich or if it was just a little bit of everyone. I think it was everyone because the three ball was just dropping last night. Didn't they set a record for 3.5 or something like that?
Yeah, it was a record. 13 made 3.5.
Yeah, so, I mean, you just don't know what to expect with this team just yet. And I guess I didn't know what to expect with the Kings. I thought they were going to be better this year. And they're looking more like the Kings that we're used to. So.
Yep. Let's go over some individual stuff that I've been looking at. Jazz, you kind of expected, it's not surprising that Mitchell and Boyan are the top two scorers. Do you happen to know who the third top scorer is right now?
The third top scorer? Well, it's not going to be Joe because Joe hardly took a shot against the Lakers. Yeah. I'm going to go with, is it Moutier?
It is Moutier. Moutier is their third leading scorer.
He's looked fantastic. I mean,
yeah, there's
been a few minor things, you know, he's made a few bad plays here and there, but for the most part, he's looked great and aggressive on offense. I've really been happy with his performance.
Yeah, I've been pleased with him. We kind of knew that he was a resurrection project where his career just hasn't been doing what you would expect a lottery pick's career to do. But I've been impressed how quickly he's been able to fit into the system, just how solid he looks in the offense. He's overcoming some of his Moutier type habits, but it's working really well.
And it's not going to last, though. But let's be honest, because he's going to fall. Maybe he doesn't fall that much in terms of his scoring, but you are definitely going to see Conley rise. You're going to see Ingles rise. But yeah, if we can get this level of production out of Moutier this season, I am overjoyed because I did not expect this.
Yeah, I expect we'll see it slide a little bit back to normal. Conley's shooting will recover. Right now, he's shooting 23% from the field. That's not going to last. Meanwhile, you have other guys like Royce O'Neal, who's very stingy with the shots he actually takes. He's shooting 70%, So that kind of balances out, I guess.
Okay.
It's so fun to look at small sample size. Donovan is shooting 50% from three right now, you know? Fun stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that one's going to hold. Let's talk about Donovan for a second. Because in that opener, I think one of the biggest takeaways from that game is how good Donovan looks. I mean, he did not miss a beat, even with having all that time spent with Team USA. He comes right back in, and he seems to pick up where he left off at the end of last season, which was a fantastic spot. You remember he had that slump to start the year, but he finished really strong. And, yeah. I mean, he looks like a guy who's taken another step in his game. He's hitting these wild shots, these scoop shots, these turnarounds from mid-range. He's got his outside shot going. He just looks like the complete package deal for the Jazz.
Yeah, and one thing with him is he kind of felt like the first two games, it really was all on him. And the problem with that is that, yes, they can have it be all on him, but they're going to need that second score, which is clearly Boyan early going. And so without him in the game against the Lakers, their offense just could not get going. And so with the two games where Boyan is there, there's a lot more freedom with Donovan moving around. And against the Kings, he only had 15 points because he didn't need to have any more. Everybody was on fire. Boyan, I want to say he had 20 points in the first half. I mean, he looked great. So it's like I can see the pieces of the Jazz offense where I think the offense is going to pick up. Defense is looking great already. But when you have Conley making shots, and as long as Boyan stays healthy, I can see all that clicking too. And it's just very, very encouraging right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm loving what I'm seeing from Boyan. I'll be honest. I hadn't watched him a lot except for when the Jazz had played the Pacers. And so I didn't even have a good memory of how he was as a player. But especially last night, I mean, it just felt like his coming out party to say, I'm here and I'm ready for this. And we're going to, you know, we're going to go somewhere with this team.
Yeah.
You mentioned Conley struggles. What do you attribute that to? Is it just a new system? Is it because it's just weird to see him miss so many shots. I have my own theory, but I don't know if anyone would agree with me.
Gosh, I don't know. Game one was the worst shooting night of his career. Game two, not much better. Game three was better. That looked like more like Yoko Conley. I don't know if it's nerves. This is only the second team he's played on in his entire career, so it's kind of adjusting for a player to be a vet that long and then only go to a second team at this point. So maybe it's some of that. Maybe it's just getting comfortable with the system. Maybe his head's just thinking of so many things, so many different changes to the offense and goals and everything that he just kind of forgot about himself. I don't know. What do you attribute it to?
I attribute it to the headband.
Ah.
I think the headband in Utah is cursed. He wore it the first two games. You saw what happened. He took it off for the third game, and all of a sudden, he played better.
That's got to be it.
But if it's not that, I think it's where you come into this environment where you're surrounded by new people. You know, it's not like they added a couple new pieces around him. He's the new piece along with a bunch of other guys, and I think he's trying to find out where he fits in, and I think that's causing guys to second guess what they would do normally. I think that's why when you saw Ingles in LA, I think he took like two shots. I mean, that's not who Joe is. And once guys get comfortable enough to say, okay, I can do what I do and it's not going to cause any issues with this team, I think you'll see them all improve. But right now, I think there's just some hesitance to take the shot.
Yep.
At the same time, I think you see Moutier with his struggles here and there. I think it's trying to do too much. There's kind of both sides of that. You either are hesitant to do what you do, or you try to do too much when you're in a new system. And once those all balance out, I think that's when the Jazz are really going to start clicking.
Yeah, I agree.
So any other takeaways from these first three games? I know it's a small sample size, but
Just one other note. Quinn used his coach's challenge and won, and that took away three free throws.
Yeah, so yeah,
cool.
I saw that.
Cool to watch him do it and that, and have it work.
So I guess there's one thing I don't understand, because I know that they use a timeout if they get it wrong. If they get it right with the challenge, then the team retains their timeout. Do they get a second challenge in the game if they get it right, like the NFL does? Or I didn't think they did.
No, it's just one challenge.
Yeah, I wish you could.
Works or it doesn't.
I wish you could keep that, because that makes teams really reluctant to use it until you get to the end of the game. Because it seems like you may need that to challenge a foul call very late in the game when it could make a difference. But I don't know. Good to see it put to use. And, you know, there was no risk of anything happening with that game last night.
And I think so far the coaches' challenge is working the way they want, where, yeah, coaches are going to be reluctant to use it. So you kind of have a pace of play issue there. You know how it's like in the NFL, there's so many calls, they got to sit there and wait and just make sure. And I think with the NBA, you know, even then there are some calls where the refs have to go and look at the clock and see if they got it out of time or whatever they're looking at. So coach's challenge sounded like one more thing that might slow down the NBA game. And it does a little bit, but not that much. And because you only get one, whether you're right or wrong, coaches are going to be reluctant to use it. Maybe they'll keep it in their pocket. They'll wind up not using it the game. I think that's exactly what the NBA wants. I think they only want coaches to use their challenge like every third or fourth game.
Okay. Yeah, and that makes sense. But, you know, if I'm a coach, I want to make sure I'm giving my team the best chance to win. I'm going to use it, you know, unless I think I'm going to need this, like I said, in the last 2 minutes of the game. If there's a call like last night where there's 3 points on the line, that, and you have the risk of getting one of your guys in foul trouble. I can see this being used early in the game. Let's say Gobert goes and picks up his second foul in the first quarter. It may be worth using it there to save Rudy from getting into foul trouble early. That could be huge for the game.
And you also look at Oklahoma City game. There was that questionable call toward the end of the game, which Donovan probably could have won with the coach's challenge, but he was out of timeouts, so coaches have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, cool. Looking ahead, we got Phoenix this week. Trying to think of who else we have on
Phoenix
the agenda.
On the road.
Okay.
Clippers at home, and then Kings on the road. Now, I would say Kings on the road is a gimme. Suns and Clippers is interesting. They played each other and the Suns actually won. Suns did not have Rubio and they don't have Ayton. Clippers still don't have Paul George, but that was a surprising result. So when the Jazz go on the road against the Suns, that is not a gimme. In fact, small sample size, Suns have the number one net rating in the NBA right now. So,
and that's wild. That is wild. Yeah. Is it the coaching difference? Didn't they add Monty Williams as head coach this offseason?
I think you have to give a lot of credit to the coach on that one. I think this naturally would be the year for Devin Booker to go to the next level, but they have a lot of good pieces around them. You know, Rubio's there. Saric is there. I think they've constructed their team a little better than they have in years past, and they're going to be able to build on it.
Okay, we'll see. Ayton's going to be out a while, isn't he? Didn't he get like
25 games,
a drug use suspension? So, okay. So what are you thinking we do this week? You thinking that's a? Are you going with the 2-1? You going with the 1-2?
I'm thinking it's another 2-1 week. I don't know which one of the Suns and Clippers. I just feel like they're going to lose one of those. 3-0, I think, is very doable, but I feel like it's going to be a 2-1 week.
Okay, I'll join you on the 2-1. I'm going to say that we can get the win in Phoenix. It's one of those things, small sample size. I don't know just yet. You know, I'm not ready to be a believer, but they did have a chance when Phoenix was playing at Denver. Booker ended up getting blocked at the very end of the game. I think he was going for the layup to put him up by one, if I remember correctly. So. You know, should have practiced against those double teams a little bit more. We'll see what happens.
Yep.
Okay. Should we jump over? I know we got a lot of NBA stuff to talk about this week.
Yeah, there's different NBA news and notes. You know, Zion Williamson, he's missing the beginning of the season. Yeah, Ayton, he's going to be out for the Suns. There's a lot of different players who are out. We still have Dante Exum out. Paul George is out on the Clippers. I would say the normal amount of players here and there who are going to be missing some time. There are 7 teams that are still undefeated in the NBA. There are 7 teams that have yet to win a game in the NBA.
Okay.
So I would say we're off to the beginning of a normal season.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that kind of works out with the law of averages there. You know, you are going to have teams that are going to fall to the bottom early. You're going to have those early risers. And some of those will come back down to earth. We've seen that in years past. I think that happened last year with the Kings. They were one of those teams that just seemed like they were finally putting it together. And this year, they're off to a very different start.
Yeah, I wonder about the Kings because, you know, they had their best season in 13 years last year. They fire their coach anyway. They bring in Luke Walton. And they do not look great right now. Makes me wonder if they're just going to backslide. But we'll see.
Okay. On top of that, if there's nothing else, I think we were going to make some predictions. Usually we do this before the season starts. This year we're getting it done right at the beginning.
Yep.
So you ready to dive into that?
Yes. First, let's go over what our NBA Finals predictions are. And Alan didn't sit in his pick, so we'll read those off as well.
Okay.
Alan, for the Finals, he picks Sixers versus Jazz. He said versus, so it looks like he did not say who was going to actually win. I'm going to guess he would have picked Jazz. But
yeah, I'll say he would. I'll make that call for him.
I'm going to say he says Jazz over Sixers. What do you think?
I'm going to say you end up with the Clippers and the Bucks. I'm going to say that the Clippers win it all.
Yep, I'm going to go Clips beat the Sixers. But I do think Jazz will make the Western Conference Finals. All right, MVP. Alan picks Kawhi.
That's just like him, copying my pick from last season. I'm going to do the same, though. I'm going to say Kawhi. I think last year he was great. This year he comes in completely healthy. He's got a great roster around him again. Got a great coach. You know, and with what he did to Golden State in the finals last year, yeah, I'm going Kawhi, runner-up. I'll go Giannis.
Okay. See, Alan did not get a runner-up. My runner-up, I think I'll go with... Okay, I actually let Giannis repeat. Yeah, I'll go with Giannis. I was going to say Harden, but I think Westbrook's going to be doing too much.
And that's where I was at. I was thinking Harden will absolutely deserve to be up there, but where he's got someone else, you know, it's a two-headed snake now. I don't see him being able to climb that ladder as much.
Yeah. Defensive player of the year. I will pick Rudy. I will pick Rudy.
And I'm going to pick Rudy. I mean, it's his award until someone comes and takes it from him.
Yep, and the Jazz have number one defense right now. His second was Paul George. My second, I'm going to go with Embiid.
And that's who I was going to go with. From what I've seen, there's a lot of guys picking Embiid to win it this year, so we'll see.
Yeah. Okay, Coach of the Year. Alan picked Doc with Quinn as his runner up.
Okay.
I don't think Doc, because he just had Kawhi and Paul George handed to him.
Does that matter, though?
I think so.
See,
I mean, you look at historically, Phil Jackson only won it once. Jerry Sloan never won it because they had such good players. It's like, well, of course he should win.
Yeah, but you've had Steve Kerr win it. You had Greg Popovich win it. You've had guys who have great players on their teams win this award. And why I ask is because Doc was going to be my pick to kind of bring in Kawhi and George and make them fit into that system. There's three other guys who I think can contend for this award, though. And I don't know that he deserves it, but I think Frank Vogel could be one. I'll leave him off as my runner-up. I want to say Quinn Snyder because, let's face it, Quinn is one of the best coaches in the NBA. But I'll give you my pick. I'm going to go with Mike Malone as my runner-up.
I was going to go with Malone. I think if the Nuggets have a better record than last year, that a lot of people are going to look at Malone. I am going to do Quinn as my runner up because, you know, it all depends how they finish. And I think if the Nuggets have a better record than the Jazz, Malone is a favorite. If the Jazz have a better record than the Nuggets, they're a favorite. Whoever the number one seed is in the West is probably going to be a favorite with the coach. Although, if it's D'Antoni, I wouldn't say that so much.
Okay. That's funny. All of our coaches we've picked are coaches in the West. If you had to throw someone in from the East, who would you be throwing in? I'm not saying that this counts, but.
Could Buds or Pete? No, I don't think even if they have a better record, I don't think he would repeat. It could go to Nurse because if Toronto plays that well without Kawhi, but most likely of the East, I would say it would be Brett Brown.
Okay. And that's who I was thinking would be the East contender. It's kind of funny that we're not talking about Brad Stevens, you know. Can Stevens put it together with Kemba there and a healthy Hayward and Enes Kanter coming in to fill in for Al Horford, but I guess we'll see. So, all right, let's talk the big one this year. This is a big one. Rookie of the year.
Now, I think Zion is the no-brainer here, and Allen picked Zion, but he also had the caveat if he comes back soon enough and healthy.
Okay. I think we're all there, right? That's going to be all three of us.
Yeah. So our dark horse, our runner up is really our runner up. If Zion doesn't wind up playing more than say 50 games, I think they'd be looking at other people. Like, who was it? Wasn't it Joel Embiid where he had 31 games, but there's still a lot of people saying he should be rookie because he was so good in those 31 games.
Yeah.
They wound up going to Brogdon instead, but.
Yeah.
We might get into that situation with Zion.
And that's what I'm wondering.
I'm going to pick Zion anyway.
Okay.
And his runner-up was Morant.
Yeah. Allen went with Ja Morant. I will say Zion. If the injury bug catches him, my runner-up is going to be RJ Barrett. And I'll tell you why. I think the media is going to hype up his story with the Knicks. With the disaster that is the Knicks and everything that has happened with them not being able to get free agents, I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on New York. So that's why I think he's going to get that benefit of the media. People will know him. I think John Morant is a contender, absolutely. But I think his story will get lost in Memphis with how crowded the West is.
Yeah. And my runner-up was going to be PJ Washington because I think he just has a lot more opportunity to be noticed for the numbers that he puts up. Morant and Barrett are on two teams that are going to be at the bottom of the NBA at the end of the year. So I think that might help him. If PJ is scoring about the same as Barrett and Morant, but he's on a better team, then I think that's just better for him.
Okay. Where's he playing?
I could have told you if you didn't ask me, but now I can't remember.
Sorry, I had to.
Jesus. Oh man. My internet just crapped out on me. I think I just got spamware.
Oh no.
Yeah. I'm getting all these pop-ups for offers.
What was the first name?
Oh yeah, it was Charlotte. He's on Charlotte.
Okay.
Okay, I think I got it. Okay.
Live on Jedi and Germs. Ooh. Germs battles the computer germs.
Okay. I got all that cleared up.
Good. Good. Because we got more awards to talk through.
All right.
Sixth man. Well, we'll make Alan go first since he's not here.
Alan did not pick one.
How can he not pick one?
I don't know. He just said not sure. It's like, if you're going to send these in, you have plenty
of stuff. Yeah, that's not a valid prediction, Jedi.
Okay, he's gonna lose the big X here when we compare notes. So you got it all right. So Alan forfeits sixth man of the year.
He should lose an extra point just for not putting something in there. I'm gonna go with Lou Williams coming off the bench for the Clippers. He's won it several times before. I think he's going to be very valuable there. I'm trying to think of who could be my runner up. And I had someone in mind, but I just cannot think of who it would be.
This one is actually kind of tough, just seeing how the teams are situated and who's coming off the bench for who, especially this early.
Let's go with Dinwiddie. I think Dinwiddie could do something for the Nets. He's coming off the bench, isn't he?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I want to say Lou Williams, even though I feel like he's won it enough that they're going to want to give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to go with I'm going to do Lou as my backup. I'm going to pick Marcus Smart for my sixth man.
And I'll be honest, I remembered who I wanted to put in there. And maybe...
Nope.
Joe is actually, I think, going to be a contender. I think he'll be incredibly valuable coming off the bench in Utah. And if the Jazz finish in the top four in the West, I think he gets consideration.
The thing with Joe is I just don't think he's going to put up the numbers. And that's why Lou gets it every year, because he's just like the best scorer off the bench. Now, Dinwiddie, you know, they've played two games. He's averaging 17 points off the bench. So that's a pretty good pick right now, too.
Okay. So we will see.
And Alan forfeits. Okay. Most improved player.
Okay. I got to ask first, who won it last year? Was it Siakam?
Yeah, it was Siakam.
Okay. I don't think he can win it in back-to-back years.
No.
Part of me did where Kawhi leaves the gap there. But I wanted to check first while I'm thinking about this. Once again, Alan, with the stellar pick of not sure, I'm going to kick him when he comes back on the show. He did put Emmanuel Mudiay, which looks like a good pick right now.
Yeah.
For me, let me see here. I think I'm going to go with, this may sound crazy, but Fred VanVleet feel like he's going to play a much bigger role this season in Toronto, and I think that's going to matter.
Yeah. That'd be cool if Toronto gets another most improved.
Runner up. Can't believe I'm going to say this. John, I'm going to go with Lonzo Ball as a runner up for most improved player.
That's not bad, actually. Let's see. Mine is going to be Markelle Fultz.
Ooh, that's a great pick.
Yeah. And my runner-up. I feel like it's probably going to be somebody who, it's either someone making a jump from their second to third year, or it's someone who got put on a new team and is going to have a chance to just excel that much better. You know what? I like the Fred VanVleet pick. Him as my runner-up.
Okay.
All right. Executive of the year.
Whoever the executive is for the Clippers, right?
Is it Lawrence Frank? Who is it? Yeah, Lawrence Frank. Let's see, and that's who Alan picked too, and I'm gonna pick him too. I think we're all gonna say the Clippers get executive of the year. It's just hard to shake it without you get Kawhi and Paul George. And there are a couple good runner-ups here. I think Sean Marks of the Nets would be a good runner-up. And I also think Dennis Lindsay would be a good runner-up.
Oh, Dennis Lindsay deserves it. Absolutely deserves it.
So he put was Lawrence Frank. Who would your runner-up be?
I'm trying to decide between two of them. And the two I'm going between are whoever's running the show in LA for the Lakers. Because I think the Lakers make the jump this year from missing the playoffs to being a contender. You got to give consideration. The other one I'm kicking around is David Griffin.
Well, Pelinka's still in charge of the Lakers. Okay. David Griffin.
Yeah, because Griffin's with the Pelicans now. The Pelicans add Zion if he's healthy. Again, this comes down to if he's healthy. They add J.J. Redick. They pick up Derek Favors. Pelicans did a really good job of retooling after losing their franchise centerpiece, Anthony Davis. And not only do they bring in those guys, they got a good package deal from L.A. They pick up Ball, who I mentioned as a most improved player candidate. They get Josh Hart. They get Brandon Ingram. You know, how do these pieces fit together? So let's go with Pelinka as number two, and Griffin can be my number three.
Okay. And those are our predictions.
Who'd you pick as your number two? Your runner-up?
Marks.
Okay.
Kevin Durant, even if Durant's missing the year, you got to consider that.
Yeah, that's very true.
Okay, let's move on to Devin's quick hits.
Quick hits. All right, let's talk a little bit of local college football. The Utes played last night, late game against Cal. They had their first shutout in Pac-12 history. So they won, I believe it was 35-0. They were ranked 12th. Is Utah a top 10 team, John?
Yeah, because you also had some big ones fall. Oklahoma lost.
You had Oklahoma lose. You had Notre Dame get manhandled by Michigan. I believe Auburn lost against LSU. I think they were number 9. So even though that was a close game, they should drop a place or two. with that loss. So yeah, I tend to agree. Let me look ahead and see who the Utes will play this week. As they continue Pac-12 action, Utah will face off against Washington this Saturday. It is an away game. We'll be on Fox, afternoon game. Who do you think takes that one?
I think Utah will.
Okay. I am hoping so. I think they will. So going with the Utes. In other local news, let's see. BYU had a great victory against Team Bai.
Yeah.
Utah State had a terrible loss, 31-7 against Air Force. Maybe Utah State is not quite who we thought they were. They will be facing off next week against BYU. This will take place in Logan. Be a Saturday night game, 8 p.m. It will be on ESPN2, so you guys will all be able to catch it. So who are you taking? Utah State, who comes off a big conference loss, or BYU, who their last game was a win at home against Boise State?
See, and that's the thing. The Boise State win makes me think that BYU can pull this off against USU. And USU hasn't been the most consistent this year. So I think I'm going to go with BYU. I don't even know who's favored in this game, but I'm going to go ahead and pick BYU.
Okay, I'm going to pick Utah State just because I think it's tough sometimes when you come off a big win and then you go into a bye week. You maybe let your guard down a little bit. And I think Utah State got a big wake-up call this week. So I think they'll want the win a little bit more than they would have had they been winning. So we'll split. We'll see what happens there. Fallon, we're here. I don't know who he'd pick. He'd probably say he's not sure.
Yes.
I'm just kidding, Alan. I'm sorry. So that's kind of what happened there. We went over who fell in the polls for that. Let's do a quick hit on the NFL. To my knowledge, we have two teams that are still undefeated. That would be the Patriots. And the other team would make Alan very happy. That would be the 49ers.
Blows my mind that they're still undefeated.
So I guess I want to ask, who is more likely to make it out of this week with that streak still intact? 49ers will play the Panthers.
Okay.
And the Patriots will play the Browns.
Ah, I think Patriots are more likely of the two to still be undefeated.
Okay. And that's where I was at as well. Panthers are 4-2, so they have a good record. Browns, I believe, are 2-4, just not who we thought they were going to be. So,
yeah.
Okay. I'm looking real quick just to see if there's any other games. Not really much use in going over them. By the time people listen, these games are all going to be over. So we'll skip through that. We did our local touch on college football. The polls are not out yet, so we don't know where we'll be. So I say we keep the quick hit small this week and jump over and talk some pop culture. I know we got quite a few things to go over this week, I think.
Yeah, I saw two movies since we last recorded. I saw Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, and I also saw Zombieland Double Tap. You had these two sequels go head-to-head with each other. Maleficent is the bigger box office winner so far, but it also had the bigger budget, so you kind of would expect it to work out that way. Maleficent 2 is very similar to Maleficent 1, as in, if you like the first one, you like the second one. It all just depends on what you thought of it. The first one I thought was fine, so the sequel, I think, is fine. I think I like the sequel a little bit better. They got a different actor for Prince Philip, and Prince Philip isn't quite as useless in this one as the last one. I also liked that the villain this time around is Michelle Pfeiffer as an evil queen. Philip and Aurora, 5 years later, they're finally getting married. I don't know why it took them 5 years. But Aurora goes to beat Philip's parents, and his mom is Michelle Pfeiffer, and you can tell right away she's going to be a villain, although it takes most of the movie for the rest of the characters to figure it out. And she winds up wanting to have a war against Maleficent and the fairy creatures that she rules over. So there's a lot of CGI, there's a lot of feel to it that you would expect from a big budget live action sequel to a movie that was a remake of an animated film. But Angelina Jolie's really good in the role still. There are some really cool sequences. There are some surprises in the movie that aren't in the trailers, which I appreciated. The ending was kind of forced for me and kind of left me going, hang on a second, with some of the logic there, but you know, it was fine. It's fine. It's good to take kids to. And if you like the first one, you'll like the second one.
Okay. That works. Yeah, at least you know what you're getting, right? It's not one of those where there's a big drop off in the sequel that feels overly forced. So yeah, that's to me, that's a good way to do a sequel. You know, it's safe. Yeah. It's a safe way to.
Yes, it felt like a very safe sequel.
Okay, the other movie you mentioned was one that I am actually very interested in seeing. I really enjoyed the first Zombieland. You know, we're right before Halloween. What were your thoughts on Double Tap?
I really enjoyed Double Tap. And you know, it was cool to see the four characters together again 10 years later. But my favorite thing about Double Tap was a character played by, I don't remember exactly how to say her name, Zoe Dutch or Dutch or something like that. She plays this total ditz who is somehow still alive in the zombie apocalypse, and the way her character bounces off everybody else is just hilarious. I laughed at the vast majority of laughs I had from the movie was from her or the way people were reacting to her. So she was a great addition. Of those two movies that I saw this weekend, I would recommend Zombieland 2 more.
Okay. Awesome. I'm going to have to go check that one out. That's one I've been really excited about. And it's kind of one you have to see in the next few days. I mean, you don't have to, but it fits the season.
Yeah.
So, all right. Anything else on pop culture from you?
No, that's it for me.
Okay. I did some Netflix watching this week. I thought I was getting a movie, but I ended up watching a first season of a show. Now the show is Living With Yourself. I'm sure you've seen the previews of that. Paul Rudd. It was very interesting. So basically Paul Rudd plays this character, Miles, who's life just has seemed to gone down the tubes. He doesn't have all that energy about it. He just seems kind of miserable. You know, he looks frumpy. And so he's talking to this guy at work and he's saying, well, how did you change your life? How did you become this person all of a sudden? Because you weren't like this before. And he tells him, well, I went to the spa. And so Miles goes, well, whatever, you know. And he ends up going to the spa, makes the decision to do so. And when they put him under, and when he wakes up, he is buried out in the forest in a plastic bag. And what happens is it turns out he has been cloned. So this story is about how he exists with his clone. And it feels kind of dark at times. I'm not going to lie, but I really enjoyed it. And by the end of the first season, I was left wanting more. Paul Rudd is actually fantastic working opposite of Paul Rudd. You know, I'm trying to think of how many shows have done this. You had like The Parent Trap. I can't think of any others off the top of my head, but it's interesting. I think people would like it.
Okay.
So worth checking out. The other one that I just started diving into is one that we've talked about on the show before. Season 2 of The Kominsky Method is on Netflix now. I loved the first season. The second season, I still find myself laughing out loud quite a bit. It's a good show. I mean, it's very mature, kind of dark humor at times, but I love it. I love it.
You actually reminded me of one other thing I watched on Netflix. I watched El Camino.
The Breaking Bad movie.
Yeah, and it was really good. It was really cool to kind of go back into that world for another couple hours. And it's all about, you know, what happens to Jesse after the season finale. And I would say about a third of the movie is flashbacks to what was going on with Jesse in the months that we didn't see him in the series, and then flashing forward to the aftermath. And it was really cool to see Jesse again, see Aaron Paul in that role. He was outstanding. The other big player is Jesse Plemons, who played the nice psychopath who helped kidnap them in the last season of Breaking Bad. And so he gets more to do here, and he is just super creepy. And, you know, I just really enjoy it. I enjoy Vince Gilligan's writing and the way he's able to make stories go forward and make things happen not quite the way you think they're going to. And just really enjoy it. Really good.
Okay.
A must-see for people who like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
Okay, and I was going to ask, if you haven't seen Breaking Bad, will you be able to keep up with the movie?
I don't think so.
Okay, so...
I mean, there's this like, three-minute recap in front of it to let you know or basically to remind you what happened in Breaking Bad, but yeah, I would say it would be rough if you haven't already watched Breaking Bad.
Okay. Okay. Some people, like myself, totally miss the Breaking Bad phenomena. So I still need to go get caught up, but I'll add that one onto the Netflix list. Catch it after I watch the series. A nice little addendum to it.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's about it. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Well, as always, we want to thank everyone for listening. Make sure you give us a like on Facebook. Give us a follow on Twitter, and wherever you are downloading our podcast from, please leave us a 5-star review. Those help us to get found, makes it worthwhile for people to listen. We very much appreciate those. If there's anything you want us to talk about on the show, please tweet us at Jedi and Germs, and we will look forward to continuing through this NBA season with you next week. We wish you all a very happy and safe Halloween. And John, please take us out.
Bye, everybody.